Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and sermon from our December 6th service. Reverend Bodie's sermon title is, All Manner of Things Will Be Well. Thanks for listening.
Today we light the second candle of the Christmas season, which is the candle of hope. And I would like to read a familiar poem from Emily Dickinson, who was born on December 10th. Which would be this coming Thursday. She would be 185 years old this coming Thursday. She was born in Amherst, Massachusetts in 1830. Of course, Emily Dickinson is well known today. She was not well known during her lifetimes, nor were her poems well known. Even to her sister Lavinia, she didn't know what her sister was up to. I mean, it was only after her death that Lavinia went into her room and found hundreds and hundreds of these poems which she knew nothing about, and that's how these poems became known in the world. One of the poems that she wrote about was had to do with a little songbird, a bit unusual songbird, not the kind that sits in the branches of the trees or flies in the air, but one that lives inside you, in your heart, in your soul. Also, the songbird is a little unusual in that, unlike other songbirds, it isn't always looking for food. This little songbird needs nothing, asks nothing, not even a crumb. The name of this little songbird? Hope. It sings and it sings and it sings, and it never stops singing. At least that's how Emily Dickinson thought of it. And she wrote this poem saying, hope is that thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard. And sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. She says, I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea. Yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. That's the little songbird of hope that Emily Dickinson wrote about. And so on this second Sunday of the Christmas season, we light a candle to this little songbird of hope who lives within us and who never quits singing, no matter how worried or frightened or upset or sad we are. Indio Kasad, will you please light the second candle of the Christmas season, our candle of hope? The theme for my sermon this morning is based on the words of the anthem that the choir will be singing in a few minutes. These are words that are printed on the insert in your bulletin today, and they contain the refrain, all will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things will be well. I first came across these words or similar words in T.S. Eliot's poem, Little Gidding. You may be familiar with some of the well-known words there where he says, we shall not cease from exploration and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. But both prior to and after those lines, there are other lines that go, and all shall be well and all manner of thing shall be well. Those, however, are not the words of T.S. Eliot. They are rather a slight adaptation from the words from the 14th century Benedictine Christian mystic Julian of Norwich, who had written centuries before, all shall be well, and all shall be well, all manner of thing shall be well. And this is the Julian that is being addressed by the composer of the anthem that the choir will be singing. And I think a little background on the life of Julian will be helpful here in understanding this anthem. Even though the biographical facts of Juliana or Julian of Norwich are sketchy, including even her name, because it may be that her name actually derives from the Church of St. Julian of Norwich, of which she was a part, with which she was associated. She was an anchoress, that is, one who lived a consecrated, reclusive life that was devoted to meditation, prayer, and to spiritual counseling. And her dwelling, Julian's dwelling, was a small one-room cell that was attached to the Church of St. Julian that was in Norwich, England. The dates of Julian are thought to be 1342 to 1416. We're not sure. But this was a time in England and in Europe in general when plague epidemics were rampant. And it is believed, too, that Julian, before she became an anchoress, about the age of 30, she fell victim to the plague, and upon her deathbed, her parish priest came to her to administer the last rites of the church, holding, as part of the ritual, a crucifix above the foot of her bed. Julian later reported that she was losing her sight and felt physically numb. But as she gazed on the crucifix, she saw the figure of Jesus begin to bleed. And over the next several hours, she had 16 visions of the Christ. And by the time those visions ended, she had been healed. She had recovered. Immediately, she wrote down these visions and then in later years added theological reflections with respect to them. And this resulted in a book, Divine Revelations of Divine Love, which is believed to be the first book by a woman written in the English language. Love was indeed the thrust of Julian's writings, for to her, and she was cutting against the theological grain of the time, there was absolutely no wrath in God. Julian was overwhelmed by an experience of divine love, and she had a vision of God as father protector, mother creator, and lover. So both male and female. She said this was given to her, these words, these sweet words were revealed to her. I am the power and goodness of fatherhood. I am the wisdom and loving kindness of motherhood. I am the light and grace, which is all blessed love. And to the question, if God is love, then why is there so much suffering, hardship, and trouble in the world? She said to that question, she heard God saying, you will not be overcome. God did not say you would not be troubled, but God said, you will not be overcome. It was also in the context of this question that Julian heard the words that she was famous for, and which T.S. Eliot quoted, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of thing shall be well. So this is a little background on Julian of Norwich, whom Thomas Merton called the greatest of English mystics. She was never officially made a saint, but there are feast days in three traditions, Roman Catholic, Anglican, and Lutheran. And in 2013, there began to be a week-long celebration of her life in her home city of Norwich, England. And there is a shrine, a modern shrine, that is built to her because her little cell had been bombed during World War II. In Norwich, they rebuilt the cathedral, they rebuilt the church, and they added this shrine. So this is the Julian that's being addressed by the composer of the anthem that the choir will sing. And that composer is the Reverend Meg Barnhouse. She's a Unitarian Universalist minister, the senior minister at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas. And I first heard her sing this song along with her partner, Kaya Hartwood, at a conference, a week-long conference in Star Island off of Portsmouth, New Hampshire in 2009. And then 2 months ago, she was the presenter also at our Ministerial Professional Days conference that is near Tacoma. And there I heard again, not once but twice, this song, All Will Be Well, being played and sung by both her and Kaya. And so I then began to wonder whether there might be a choral rendering of this piece. And so I asked Meg and I asked Kaya, and they said, yes, Kaya had made a choral rendering of this piece. And so that's what the choir, and then immediately they sent it to Marge and me. And I want to thank you, both of you, all of you, Marge and the choir is what I'm trying to say, for doing this morning at fairly short notice. So I'll get out of here and give you the stage.
You are holding my hand,
and all will be well.
Let me begin by briefly walking with you through the text of this anthem that the choir just sang, giving you my take on what's happening there, and then I'll unwrap it a bit, providing some deeper analysis of the issue that I see being brought forth here. In this song, Meg Barnhus, the composer and lyricist, is involved in a kind of interior dialogue that addresses what is perhaps the most basic existential question of our human reality, namely, given life's often horrific conditions, is it worth the living? The composer addresses herself to this question through a conversation with the well-known words of a revered figure, the 14th century mystic Julian of Norwich, saying, "Julian, you are holy, you are holding my hand, but Julian, I have a serious question for you, something I truly don't understand, for how can you say all will be well and all will be well and all manner of things will be well? Are you naive? Are you in denial? Are you being disingenuous? For Julian, don't you know about sorrow? And Julian, don't you know about pain? And don't you know about hunger? And don't you know about shame? And Julian, don't you know about loneliness? And don't you know about disease? And don't you know about cruelty? Julian, what am I missing here? Because these things have brought me to my knees." So that's the question that the composer of this song brings to this revered Catholic mystic from hundreds of years ago. And now the author's interior, Julian, gets a chance to answer, saying, "Actually, Meg, I do know about all these things that you are crying out about. I do know about sorrow. And I do know about pain, and I do know about hunger, and I do know about shame, and I do know about loneliness, and I do know about disease, and I do know about cruelty. And you know, dear Meg, these things have also brought me to my knees. And that is where I heard, it was on my knees that I heard these words, 'All will be well.' It was not when things were actually going well, but it was on my knees and in the midst of my despair and in my greatest weakness. It was there, dear Meg, it was there, baby girl, where I heard these words and where I learned the deeper meaning of tenderness and the larger value of friendship and the creative activity of the spirit and of the eternal nature of love. These words, Meg, these words, 'All will be well, and all will be well, and all manner of things will be well.' These words were given to me in my darkest hour, and they came to me from a place beyond myself, from a place beyond my present understanding and awareness." So this is what I see going on in the text of this song, this anthem. The author is in an interior dialogue with herself through the words of this revered and saintly historical figure. And when Meg Barnhus introduced this song at the ministerial conference that I just mentioned, she said that when I first heard these words, or read these words, "All will be well, all will be well, and all manner of things will be well," when I first read those words, I thought, "That's ridiculous." And I got in an argument, she said. I got in an argument with the saintly Julian of Norwich. How could you say such a thing? But then, going a little deeper and learning a little bit more about Julian's life and her suffering, Meg Barnhus paid more attention. And so this song is a kind of replay of that experience that she went through, that argument, that interior dialogue that she had with Julian. Let's look a bit further into the question and the answer that this song puts before us. Again, I say this question is about as basic as it gets. namely, given the conditions of life as we become aware of them, can we affirm it? Can we find life good, find it worthy of living? We and all creatures come into life with a natural affirmation of it. Every living thing wants to live and develop itself. It wants to develop itself into its full potential. With us humans, however, there comes into play an evaluative function that is born out of our evolutionary history and the development of our brains, so that we now have the capacity to stand apart from life and evaluate it and judge it. The world that we at first so naturally and instinctively embrace is now questioned, judged, and often found wanting. And this, in mythological terms, is the fruit that we picked from that tree of the knowledge of good and evil in that mythological garden of paradise. And it marks our separation from the instinctive life and our natural affirmation of life, because now, to our ego minds, all is not well. For we see very clearly how this life and this world could be, should be actually, better, oh, so very, very much better than it actually is. The natural, instinctive affirmation we felt for life has now become a question. It's now become an issue. It's before us ever and always, so that now, if we are to affirm the world, we have to do it not instinctually anymore, but we have to do it spiritually and consciously. And that's the question. Can we? Will we? Are we able to affirm life and find it good in the midst of all of these conditions that the song lists of sorrow, pain, hunger, shame, loneliness, disease, cruelty, and other similar vexing concerns? Can we say and can we believe, along with Julian of Norwich, that all will be well and all will be well and all manner of things will be well? What would it take on your part to make that kind of affirmation, to say that? At the recent ministerial conference that I attended, where I heard this song, my roommate that I was staying with was Mark Gallagher, the Reverend Mark Gallagher. He just stepped out of the Vancouver Unitarian Church, where he had been a minister for a number of years. And we talked then in our room about this song and about the realization that all will be well. There was a couple of things that he said that I thought were right on target and very insightful. First, he said that it's under deep distress that we are more likely to have this breakthrough realization that all is well, rather than in our everyday normal course of things, because in our normal daily lives, we're always trying to adjust things, always trying to fix things, always trying to make them better. But when we are brought to our knees, when we're forced to surrender our will, then our ego judgments are knocked out and we are more receptive to a deeper source of life and being that is made more available to us during those kinds of times. My colleague also said that this breakthrough realization is no great achievement. It only seems to be a great achievement, a great realization, because we don't live with the notion that all is well. Instead, we generally live with the sense that all is not well. And that's the third thing my colleague said, namely that it's not that all things will be well, but that all things are already well, and we don't see it. He said Julian's words are really all is well and all manner of things are already well. It's not some future state we're talking about, but it's a present state of consciousness and awareness that is always available to us and out of which we could always live. This is the power of being that has birthed us. This is the original source from which we come and of which we are always a part. This is the infinite, unoriginated, forward-pushing, creative urge at the heart of all being, by whatever name you call it, that evolves and dissolves solar systems, galactic systems, and even whole universes, and which rolls through all things and all times. And what I see Julian saying is that to the extent that we can mentally and spiritually identify and experience our connection to this ultimate source of being, then all is well and all will be well. And this, I want to say to you this morning, this is the anchor point. This is the anchor reality that our spirits must be tied to if we are to find our way in life. This is that little songbird of hope that Emily Dickinson is talking about, that songbird of hope that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never, never, ever stops at all. So this is our challenge, to live more fully at this level of consciousness where everything is already well, and to start with that as our base, our foundation, and to know and to feel and to experience that foundational reality out of which emerge faith and hope and love and joy. Most of our lives probably isn't lived at that level. We don't often live with the full awareness of that kind of consciousness, that anchor reality. It's only occasionally that it breaks through to us, that we have a full revelation, and often then in our darkest of our times. Mary Oliver says, "The great door opens a crack. A hint of the truth is given so bright it is almost a death, a joy we can't bear, and then it is gone." So often we don't see it. But even to catch just a glimpse of that fullness, the fullness that Julian of Norwich caught, that can sustain us through long periods of drought. As I see it, the various religions of the world and their theologies are seeking this level of consciousness, this anchor reality, each in their own different ways. Preparing this sermon and working with the phrase, "all is well," I was brought back to my childhood. I was brought back to the theology of my youth, a different theology than I have now. And there, as a youngster, there was a hymn that I loved to sing, and I loved to play on the piano to the extent I could. It was titled, "When Peace Like a River." I don't know how many of you know it. Good, I see some nods, so maybe you can help me in a minute here. So the first verse goes, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, Thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." And then the refrain follows from that in the same vein. And here's where you can help me, because it starts in the upper register, "it is well," and then goes to the basses and tenors. We got any bass? "It is well with my soul. With my soul, it is well, it is well with my soul." It's something like that. My theology is different now than it was then, but the place that was touched by that hymn, I think, is the same place that is touched by this anthem that Meg Barnhouse and the choir sang. 3 weeks ago, on a Saturday, I attended a memorial service for the wife of a close cousin of mine. This was in my hometown of Linden, Washington. And there, in a touching moment in that memorial service, one of the family members described how the immediate family, as their loved one was dying, gathered in the hospital room around the bed of their loved one. And as she was dying and with her last breaths, they sang her out of this life and into the next one with the words of that hymn, it is well with my soul. So I have the view that theologies reach that place where all manner of things are well. They reach it through different routes. Many theologies take you beyond this natural world to find that reality, to find that place, to find it so you can live in this world. And I understand, for some lives are so fraught with insecurity, with suffering and anguish, that only another realm outside of this natural world would seem plausible in order to find a place where all would be well, a place and a time where a divine power would wipe away all tears, and there would be no more death, and no more hunger, and no more strife. My own religious philosophy is more naturalistic and psychologically oriented and based. So I speak of this place where all is well as a level of being, a level of consciousness that is possible in this natural realm, in this natural world. I will also say this cautionary note, that when you experience this place where all is well, that experience can be so emotionally overwhelming and so fulfilling that there's a tendency to believe that the religious and theological framework in which and through which you received that experience, there's a tendency to believe that it can only be found within that framework, and that that is the one and only way, which causes a whole lot of mischief in our world. And one more related thought belief here, namely that theologies and religious systems are secondary things. They come and they go. It's been my experience. And so my personal operating principle here is this, that if I have been moved emotionally by something, I want to find a way to retain the reality that gave rise to that emotion and not throw that reality out because it is encased in a theology that doesn't work for me anymore. Theologies are of the intellect, but feeling and emotion are related to realities of a deeper center. And so to my way of thinking, it's the job of the intellect to find a theology that fits the things that have emotionally moved you and not to get cut off from something that was connected to your deeper self and that brought you emotion, not to get cut off from that just because the theology doesn't fit for you anymore. So here's the thing. What I'm talking about today are two levels of reality, two planes of consciousness, two dimensions of experience that we humans live with, that we struggle with all the time. One is the plane of consciousness that transcends the polarities, the judgments of the ego. This is the place where all is well and all will be well. And the other plane, the other is the plane of consciousness of ego judgments, where things are sometimes well and many times not so well. And the human challenge, the human trick, is to live at both levels of reality simultaneously. So that on the one hand, you participate in the action of the world. You fight for your causes. You try to make the world a better place as you understand it. And on the other hand, you also see that even while you're involved in that task, you also see the glory that is already here, and you experience that all is well and all will be well, no matter how much you can see that things might be improved. That's the dual reality that we live in. That's the paradox we daily experience. I'll conclude by illustrating these two levels of consciousness that we face, that we live in, by talking about the problems that our planet is currently facing, the problems that Case brought up earlier. As he said earlier in the service, leaders from all over the planet are meeting this week in Paris. They're addressing the issues of climate change. And they do this in the awareness that the sixth mass extinction of the various species of the earth is well underway, not caused this time by natural disaster, but by the habits of the species that we are a part of. From the point of view of ego judgments, we can hardly say that all is well and all will be well. And so in the face of this, the ego it often is in despair, close to collapse, wondering how it will go on, whether it can go on. So, in order to go on and to try to save the planet, the ego needs to know and it needs to connect itself with this other level of reality, this other level of consciousness that is both prior to and greater than our ego judgments and greater than our own present little life. Again, this is the reality of the creative power that rolls through all things, creating, destroying whole universes as a person puts on a change of clothing. We are part of that ongoing creative power. It is part of us. We are part of it. We can never be separated from it, not now, not ever. I remember the last public interview that Joseph Campbell gave. He had esophageal cancer. He was close to his death. He startled the interviewer by saying, "Suppose the world blows up. So what? Just absolutely so what?" Now, this startled the interviewer. Joseph Campbell, of course, didn't want the world to blow up. But he was pointing to this other level of consciousness that goes on, that we are a part of no matter what happens, where all is and will be well. He was pointing to the reality of hope with a capital H. It's the reality that undergirds and sustains our present particular hopes with their lowercase h's. Connecting with hope in its foundational form, thus, gives one the courage and the strength to lovingly work to try to save our planet, and at the same time, while we lovingly and steadfastly work to shift things, we also simultaneously notice and appreciate the miracle that is already here. To me, this song of Meg Barnhouse gives voice to this anchor reality of hope. To me, the words and music don't just point to or touch that place of hope, but they actually help to create it. Hearing the words, "all will be well," and listening to the music, "all will be well," brings that reality, the reality of that state, into being. And so I want to close this sermon now by having our sound person Al Thompson play a recording of Meg Barnhouse and Kaya Hartwood playing and singing "All Will Be Well." If you want to follow, the words are here in the insert. Al.
She said, "All will be well, all will be well." brought me to my knees, where I heard all will be well. Not know about friends. She said, baby girl, do you not know?